Welcome back to Horoscope Witch. It's Mal. And on episode 56, I was lucky enough to have my friend Heather on the show. So Heather and I actually met through this podcast, funny enough. And Heather has become a really great friend to me. And I really value her wisdoms. So I really wanted her to come on and talk about her specific modalities. Now, Heather is an intuitive and a tarot reader, but her main modality is Ayurvedic medicine. So she kind of talks about being an Ayurvedic counselor in this episode, and she tells us all about what Ayurveda is, how she's redefining it, how she's destroying diet culture, and how she's reconnecting her own intuition to her eating habits. Now, Ayurveda might be a term that you've seen floating around the internet, but maybe you've wondered what it really is. Now, this is one of the oldest philosophies when it comes to the food, mind, body, spirit connection. And Ayurveda originated in India literally thousands of years ago. Ayurveda is not a diet. We will explore this in the episode, but Ayurveda is not a diet. It is a way of life. It's a way of being. It's a way of looking at food, your mind, your body, and your spirit, and sort of acknowledging that all of those things are connected. And I've found even the philosophy behind Ayurveda to be really empowering for me, even as an empath. So I'm so excited to sort of talk about this topic a little bit more. Now, Heather and I in the beginning do throw around some Ayurvedic phrases, and I'll kind of just explain those briefly right now so you have some pre-knowledge, although we'll go further into what they mean as the episode goes on. But in Ayurveda, there are three doshas, and we can kind of think of the doshas as the zodiac signs of Ayurveda. And those doshas are Vata, Pitta, and Kapha. Now, these doshas represent the elemental makeup of a human, and we all have different levels and mixtures of these three doshas, which then sort of affect how we are in the world. And they also inform some of the best foods we can feed ourselves and some other foods that might not be so good for our elemental makeup. So that's just kind of the spark notes. Again, Heather will explain that more deeply in the episode, but I thought I would just give you all that information here before we get into it. And just to, you know, introduce Heather a little bit more. Heather's really inspiring to me, not only with her sort of relationship to food and how she's been able to reframe eating for me, but as you will hear, she tells her story about dissociation from the body. And also, she talks about how she overcame disordered eating. If that topic is particularly triggering to you right now, feel free to come back to this episode later. Although I will say Heather talks about overcoming disordered eating in a really empowering way. So it's nothing too graphic or anything like that. She really just talks about how, you know, actually having her children was what brought her back into her body. And speaking of that, I wanted to say that something I really admire about Heather is that she is, guys, she's literally the best mom. And I think if you're like me, I mean, does anybody else follow like 100 psychologists and trauma specialists on Instagram, or is that just me? But like, if you literally scroll on my Instagram, literally, like you'll see like 5 posts a day about childhood trauma and how it affects us as an adult. And, you know, I think something we need more of in the discussion of trauma is people who are models of how they overcame their childhood trauma. And then also, I don't think we see enough the childhood trauma, you know, the person growing into an adult and becoming a really, really good parent. And that's sort of what Heather models for me, and she inspires me in that way. I don't know. I don't know if she knows that, but it does inspire me to see that, yeah, that she's just a great mom. And she'll talk about her journey with motherhood too a few times in this episode. And we also talk about not only just Ayurvedic principles and practices, but we also dial it back to just simple intuitive eating. This is also another phrase I see on the internet a lot, and I often wonder, what is intuitive eating, and are we all defining this like the same way? So Heather really talks about what intuitive eating is to her and how we can sort of implement intuitive eating into our lives in an aligned way. Now, towards the end of the episode, we get a little bit away from food and we talk more about non-food related Ayurvedic practices. Like I said, Ayurveda is not a diet, it's a lifestyle. And there's so many different elements to living Ayurvedically, if that's a word. You know, there's yoga, there's movement, there's things that you can do to incorporate Ayurvedic principles into your life that have nothing to do with food. So that's kind of how we end this episode. And I think this is really inspiring. We all have been, I think, considering our relationship with food in some way in 2020. You know, quarantine, hashtag the quarantine 15. You know, we might be sort of questioning our relationship to food right now and wanting to improve that relationship. So I think this episode comes at a very timely manner. Now, the one thing I did want to say, though, and here's where I need to sort of do a better job at recognizing my own privilege in the way I go about the discussion of food. Heather and I do discuss the concept of a plant-based diet in this episode, and I just wanted to name that even like having access or even being able to discuss things like a plant-based diet, intuitive eating, Ayurvedic principles, they all come back down to someone, an individual, being able to choose what they're eating, and not only choosing what they're eating, but also having access to the foods that they need. And I just wanted to name that as the interviewer, I didn't do a very good job of bringing this up in the interview, and I wanted to bring it up now. And I think it is such an immense privilege to have access to these concepts and this conversation. And because I suspect that this episode will sort of inspire, I think, a lot of you to either have more conversations about food with yourself and your friends and your loved ones, talking more about what intuitive eating means to you, I just want to like encourage you all, my listeners, to take this conversation a step further that I didn't. And that step further is bringing the topic of privilege into this conversation. And it's interesting because I'm thinking back to something Heather and I were talking about this on the phone, and I'm kind of going back to something she said on the phone about prana. And prana is an Ayurvedic term, which we'll discuss in this episode, and it really just means life or life force energy. And something that Heather said really stuck with me. She was just like, oh yeah, it's a privilege to have access to prana foods, and foods with high prana being fresh fruits and vegetables. And like, let's just peel that back for a second. Like, it's a privilege to have access to life force energy. Like, that's just, it shouldn't be that way, right? And I think the way we start to change that, the way we start to, the way we start to become more aware of things like, you know, access to food, the way we're talking about food, is to first acknowledge the privilege of the conversation, and even becoming aware that there are so many people in this world who don't have access to the prana. I think that awareness can really is the first step of fixing all of the things that we always talk about. End world hunger, clean water for everyone. I don't think we can fix those things until the individual also acknowledges their privilege, I guess. So I just wanted to name those things before we get into the episode, since, again, me as the interviewer, I didn't do a very good job of bringing this up in the interview. And I wanted you all to inspire you to take the conversation a step forward. So not only don't only talk about plant-based diets after this, or don't only talk about Ayurveda after this, but also talk about a food desert, talk about the privilege of food. I hope you all enjoy this episode. I think it's going to reach someone who needs it, and I will talk to you all next time.
Okay, so here's what my first question was, and I know the, like, cliche healer question is, like, how did you get started in your spiritual journey, or tell me about your journey, but I actually kind of want to know more about who you were, I guess, before spirituality, or, like, you know, how did you navigate life? Was this stuff always in the back of your mind, or did you feel like completely asleep, as they say? Like, tell me more about Heather pre-Ayurveda, pre-tarot.
Yeah, that's really interesting, because I think as children, we definitely are more open. And so when I reflect back on a lot of experiences and things that I did as a child, you definitely see that witchy vibe coming out, where, like, anytime there was, like, a dead bird, I was, like, fascinated with it. I would, like, touch its feathers. And I had lots of experiences with sort of, like, almost like paranormal type things. I had this piano in my room that was electric, and I would hear it playing all the time, and I'd run over to see if it was turned on, and it wasn't turned on. And I never was really fearful of it. I mean, I kind of was intrigued by it, but it never freaked me out. And I have an aunt who is an astrologer and who collects crystals. And she shared with me multiple times when I was probably like 2, 3, and 4, that she would have these conversations with me where I would talk about how I would, like, see people and, like, talk to them. And she would try to get me to answer, who are these people? And I was like, I don't know. So they're definitely, like, as a child, you know, I definitely was drawn towards the occult kind of, and, like, plants and being outside. And so that definitely was there. And then, you know, I got into high school, and I was, an overachiever student. I was an athlete. I got into sports. And so that kind of became my identity, that, you know, an athlete and an overachiever academically. And from that point through my mid-20s, that was my identity. I was, you know, the one who worked extra hard and stayed at the library really, really late so that I could make sure the paper I was writing was just right. And I was really, really critical of everything I did. I think a lot of times, from an outsider's view, people see overachieving students as just being really, really smart. But I think a lot of times the driving force behind that is this, like, crushing fear of failure, that, like, not proving to everyone that you're capable is going to lead to, like, the end of your identity kind of a thing. So, I mean, even though I did really well in college and in high school, it wasn't fun, because I feel like I was constantly just pushing myself so hard to get that 4.0 that it was just like, that's all I was focused on. And so my sort of spirituality and that identity wasn't even on the radar. It was so oppressed through those years. And then as I got into my mid-20s, you know, and I would even say that I was a little bit materialistic. Like, I think that I put a lot of value in having nice things, where I think that was just sort of a way for me to cover up a lot of stuff that was starting to bubble. And then I got married and had my first son. And I honestly believe that his birth, like, cracked me open. Mm. The actual experience of pushing a human life out of your body kind of cracked me back open spiritually, and things started happening again. I started noticing things more and kind of becoming interested again in crystals and interested again in herbs and interested again in how plants made my body feel. And from then on, it just kind of snowballed where, you know, I kind of started accepting and letting layers shed that I had put on of that overachiever, and then reabsorbing and establishing my relationship with that, like, child that was, like, super open and super witchy, you know?
Yeah, and I've heard so many people, women or people with wombs, I've heard that a lot. Like, once you give birth, your intuition is reactivated, or your intuition becomes, like, yeah, almost undeniable.
Yeah, I mean, it's such a primal experience to be pregnant and to give birth. And I, you know, I've always had I guess from an outsider view, like, a hippie vibe. Like, I wanted to have a natural birth. I didn't want to have interventions. I didn't want to have medication. And so I mean, that experience of being in labor with my first son for 28 hours, like a full, like almost a day and a half, and having to work with the pain and feel every single thing that was going on in my body and not ignoring it. Cause I think, you know, I think I had gotten so trained to ignore how my body was feeling. Like, I was so connected and in that primal, you know, I was making these primal sounds, you know, like when you give birth, like when you're going through a contraction, you make these sounds you've never made in your life, and they're so animalistic and so primal that, of course, like you said, of course it's connecting you with that, you know, deeply feminine energy. And I think in connection to that, I know that during my pregnancy, I was so intuitive, because I think when you're pregnant, it's just like the mama bear type thing, that your intuition naturally heightens, because you know that you have to be kind of on alert and be protective, and so you're more in tune with your surroundings all the time. So I feel like I started hearing things more and smelling things more, and like my senses were just heightened. It was just a really, really cool experience for both of my pregnancies, actually.
And it's interesting because, and we'll get to the Ayurveda stuff in a second, but you know, it's interesting that also maybe pregnancy was something that sort of awakened you not only to maybe your relationship to your body, but also your relationship to food. And I wonder, like, you know, we talk a lot about dissociating from the body. Do you feel like you have a history of that? Or do you feel like that's something that plagues you?
Oh, for sure. I know that it's attached to things that happened to me as a child, but I think that controlling my body and experiencing, like, for example, as an athlete in high school and working out vigorously during college and even after college, even up until, you know, 3 years ago, I would push myself to the limits physically during exercise. And we can kind of get into the Ayurvedic perspective of that, but that's related to my doshas as well. But there was this level in my relationship with exercise and kind of disassociation of ignoring my body's signals of, like, this hurts, this does not feel good. And completely ignoring that and saying, whatever, I'm going to run an extra mile. It doesn't matter if you're hurting. And I think that in our society, we say just, you know, just push through it, push through the pain. We never say feel into it and speak to your body and honor your body. We say push through the pain, because if you don't, then you're like a wussy or whatever. And so I think through the process of going through labor and feeling the most pain I've ever felt in my body, the only thing I could do was be gentle. Like I literally had no control over these contractions. I couldn't make them stop. So the only thing I could do was be as gentle and kind to myself and have mantras. I remember I read a book. I can't remember the name of it. It's so good. We could put it in the show notes, but it's a midwife that wrote a book on natural birth. And she tells you in the book to come up with mantras to say when you have a contraction. And so having those mantras to speak to my body during that birth was so important. But I think as far as disassociation, totally. Like before that, I was so disconnected to my body in so many ways.
Yeah. And tell me, like, because I know maybe the biggest like spiritual moment or the full moment that you kind of had in your life was when you maybe decided to take the leap and move your family to Maui, which is now changing again. But maybe was it around that time when you really started to run into the Ayurveda practices and yoga? Like, tell us a little bit more about that journey.
Yeah. So I had both of my sons, and after I gave birth to my first son, Jamin, you know, you talked about how I kind of, all of a sudden I had this, you know, deep interest in herbs and plants, plant foods. And I actually transitioned from a vegetarian diet to a plant-based diet. And not necessarily, I didn't label myself as vegan at the time. I was just plant-based. But because I had been cracked open and a lot of things from my childhood were kind of bubbling up, what happened was that relationship to plant-based foods became disordered eating. Mm. And when I reflect back to myself as a teenager and even in college, there were times when I was triggered by things and I didn't know I was triggered at the time. And anytime I was triggered, I think back to, oh yeah, that threw me into 3 months of like a disordered eating habit. So after I had Jamin, having this newborn and feeling into myself, my inner child through him, that triggered me again. And the plant-based food diet became disordered eating for a solid 2 years until I got pregnant again. And then when I was pregnant, I was much more gentle with my body and kind of ate whatever I needed to intuitively. And then after my second son was born, exact same thing happened. So it was about a year after my second son, Leo, was born, where my body physically started falling apart. And I was 28 at the time, or 29 at the time. So I started having joint pain. I had inflammation. So in Ayurvedic terms, it was really, really high pitta, a lot of inflammation, high breakouts, acne. I mean, my body was just, felt like it was falling apart. And I felt so disconnected from my body. I didn't know what to do for it. And really, when I look back, it was that all of this stuff from my childhood, I was reliving through my own children, right? So having your own child is very triggering, because when they cry, even if you don't have a memory of not being comforted and held as a baby when you were crying, it's in there. So when my babies would cry and I'm cuddling them and nursing them and nurturing them, my inner child is being triggered and being like, well, when I cried, you know, maybe no one was there for me or no one took care of me the way that I wanted. So, but I didn't know that at the time. So intuitively, something that I had always ignored, yoga, was something, you know, as someone who was like worked out in the weight room and ran all the time, yoga was something that I kind of thought was useless. I literally thought it was a useless activity. Which is so funny, because now it's such a part of my life, because I just viewed it as like, well, it's just basically stretching. Like, that's all it is. And I just kind of like what we were talking about before, where when you just start to see things over and over again, you know, like I just kind of started seeing yoga here and there and hear people talking about yoga. And so that's when I started a daily yoga practice. And what happened at the end of my practices, I started having conversations with spirit. Like, I didn't really know what was happening, but it felt very familiar and very comfortable. And they would like show me things. They would show me like plants and herbs, things that I actually needed to start using to heal my body. And they also showed me tools like tarot and other divination tools and crystals. And so I started collecting all those things. And one day I was on Amazon looking for, I can't remember what exactly I was looking for, but you know how it shows like the suggested underneath what you ordered? There was a couple books on Ayurveda. And it wasn't even really, I wasn't even looking for something related to Ayurveda, but I clicked on the book and started reading like the description. And I was like, that sounds so familiar and just makes so much sense to me. So I ordered that book, read it, and then the rest is kind of history, where from then I kind of studied and practiced it solo for a year, and then found an online Ayurvedic counseling program that I enrolled in, and then we moved to Maui, and here we are.
Wow, that's amazing. It was like spirit really was planting the seeds, like Ayurveda is something that Heather needs to be doing.
Right, totally. And I, at the time I had also someone, a person was delivered into my life who did Akashic readings. And so I had no idea what an Akashic reading was. And for those who are listening, it's well, maybe Mal, you might be able to describe it a little bit better, but it's accessing sort of a blueprint to your soul, kind of.
Yeah. I always think of it like in the High Priestess card.
Yeah.
The High Priestess is holding this scroll. And in that scroll is the records of everything that has ever happened. And like, imagine your soul has a book of every past life you've lived and everything you've experienced and your karma and your dharma. It's quite trippy. I didn't really believe in Akashic Records readings. I thought they were a little bit gimmicky until I had a good one. And I was like, whoa, like that shit makes sense.
Yeah, and I kind of felt the same way, but I was being pushed so much to do it that I just knew that I had to. And in that reading, I didn't give her any knowledge beforehand. And she said, she's like, I see your hands and you're holding an old scroll. And she's like, and on the scroll, it looks like what I think Sanskrit words are. And I just heard the word Ayurveda and I was like, okay, there we go. So there definitely is some past life stuff for me related to Ayurveda. Like, I do have a connection, and I have talked to spirit in meditation about that. And I definitely know, especially there's like this deep connection to, like, I think I probably was someone who like grew plants and collected the herbs and made like tonics and medicinal things of that nature. But yeah, it definitely is something that comes intuitively to me and has always made a lot of sense.
Yeah, and I feel like Ayurveda is something that maybe if you follow a bunch of spiritual la-la on Instagram, you might have run into this word, or you might have run into something about Ayurvedic medicine, but maybe it's something that I think is a struggle to explain exactly what it is, because it's not a diet, it's more like a way of life, it's more like a philosophy. So maybe you can help us define what is Ayurveda.
Right, and I mean, everybody's gonna have their own perspective, but in its like basic form, Ayurveda is the medicine and science of yoga, and yoga intersects into Ayurveda. It believes that when the egg meets the sperm, when we are like created, we take in some of the five elements. And so those elements make up who we are in terms of our mind, body, and spirit. So unlike, you know, Western medicine that looks at the body as just the physical body, and that there's no connection between the physical body, the mind, and the spirit when it comes to ailments or disease, Ayurveda believes that everything is interconnected. So if there's something going on in the mind, there's going to be something going on in the physical body. So, you know, it's almost like if you see depression or anxiety, you're going to see it in the physical body as well. And that you can't cure one without the other, that it all has to kind of heal together. And that's why it's not just a diet, because yes, depending on, you know, in Ayurveda, we have the doshas, which for those who don't know, a dosha represents what elements will make you have. So are you fire and water, like pitta? Are you air and space, vata? Or are you earth and water, like kapha? And based off of those, what we do is we have an understanding of what routines and practices, what climates, physical environments, and foods are going to be most supportive. And so I think it feels really good to me because it helps people understand all the different layers of their body, right? As opposed, and it helps them understand, if I want balance, I'm going to need to augment my diet with these certain foods. It doesn't mean that I have to ever restrict or eliminate certain foods, but these are the foods that are going to best support my physical body, my mind, and my spirit. And these are the practices that are going to do that. And so I think it's a great medicine and philosophy for people who are looking for a way to learn how to reconnect with their body on an elemental level, and how to deeply connect the connection between between the mind and the physical body as well. Because I think as humans living in 2020, we are so disconnected from our mind. You know, the physical body and the mind and the spirit are just, I feel like they, like for most people, are all floating in different directions. And it takes a lot of mindfulness and practice to kind of bring everything back together. And it's funny because I think I don't want people to think that because I'm an Ayurvedic practitioner, like I am always living in balance. I have to work on the daily, right? And I was just telling Mal that as it's getting warmer here in Maui, I can feel my own pitta, the fire element in me, wanting to kind of flare up a little bit. But when you have that awareness, you're able to be really gentle with your body and give it what it needs.
Yeah. See, yeah, it's hard to explain because there's so many layers, but I almost feel like in a weird way, it does kind of relate to astrology. And that's why with all of the elements, like feeling like each human has a different mixture of fire, air, earth, water, and spirit. And depending on your combination of those five elements, you are going to do really well with certain types of food, or you're going to do really poorly with other certain types of food. But it goes beyond food. It's also about the way you move your body, the way you meditate, the way you take care of your nervous system. It really is probably the most comprehensive, like, body, mind, spirit philosophy I think I ever stumbled upon. And a lot of the things that I learned from my own Ayurvedic consultation with you, they made sense and they related to my birth chart. At least it made sense to me. I was like, oh, yeah. I'm a double Pisces with a Cancer ascendant. Of course, I'm like very, very Vata. Like I run Vata with a little side of Pitta here and there. And we find too that intuitive people tend to be maybe more on the Vata side, but you know, it's all different. We kind of, each person is different.
Yeah. I mean, what you were saying about astrology, when you look at like the Kapha body or the Kapha type, where they're earth and water and they're ground, I mean, they're grounded just like earth signs. And they also are stubborn, just like some earth signs, where they really like routine and they really like things to be the same. Where Vata, the air and space, is like super creative, super intuitive, but yes, needs a lot of grounding to stay balanced because they just want to naturally float up in the air and be with spirit all the time. And then our fire and water pittas, it's like they are transformative, right? They are able to alchemize whatever they want, and they have this drive and just like fire signs where they're outgoing and passionate and have this drive. But every dosha, just like every astrological sign, has the light and the dark. Like, what are the light, you know, more, not, I wouldn't say value, but like the
more high frequency.
Yeah, there you go. High frequency and low frequency, right? Of each. And it's about, you know, you can't operate in the high frequency all the time. Like, and you don't want to be in the low frequency all the time. So it's about finding that space kind of in the middle that is sustainable. And with every client I work with, I do a lot of work with them on building the intuitive relationship between their mind and their physical body, of like how to listen, how to see what really feels good. And even if I put something on your wellness plan and your body doesn't respond well to it, listen to that intuitively. Because I think with, like, you know, diet culture and mainstream diets, you get prescribed this diet and you assume that it's going to get you where you want to be physically. But the problem with that is it's like a one size fits all. They create this standard diet and they're giving it out to the masses, to people who have different elemental makeups or whatever it might be. And then what happens when they stray from it is that, you know, that self-judgment or the guilt of like, oh, I had a piece of chocolate and it's not on my diet plan or whatever. Like, it's really just diets are such a mind game. So I really try to make what I create for my clients, the wellness plan, to be very, very gentle and intuitive as well.
Yeah. And I can definitely give a really good example of one of the ways, like, Ayurveda sort of blew my mind. And I did come to you. Of course, we were friends before I came to you. And by the way, we met through this podcast.
Yeah, we should have said that. Oh my God.
I should have said it before. But I think one day someone came up to you and was like, you should start listening.
It was at a full moon sermon. Like, I was at a full moon sermon and I had only been on Maui for like 3 months. I didn't know any of the women. I just like saw the post on Instagram and like showed up and I brought my tarot cards and I like was so nervous because it was the first time that I'd ever, you know, read tarot in public. And this girl sitting next to me was like, I feel like you really like the Horoscope Witch podcast. You should listen to it. And then after that, I went like for the next week, I binged all of your episodes, and then the rest is history.
Oh my God. Isn't that funny? And first of all, this podcast is like not popular enough for that kind of thing to happen. So it must have been fate.
It was divine intervention for sure.
Yeah. And then I remember first talking to you when I was still in Malaysia. So we kind of found each other and kind of became friends like at the beginnings of like a new journey. And then I read your birth chart. And then so by the time, like, it was funny because you came to me for astrological healing. And then after that, I was like, it's time to go to Heather for some food healing. And long story short, I was expressing at the time of my appointment with you, I did not know this, but I was expressing some very low frequency vata vibes. So I was lightheaded all the time, which is a very vata thing. No matter how much water or food that I was eating, I still was dizzy all the time. There were other like physical ailments that were making it really hard for me to even do readings, and there was just a lot of vata energy that was thrown off. And the first thing that kind of blew my mind about Ayurveda is that, like, typical Western healthy kind of food vibes, you would be like, oh, you gotta juice and you gotta eat all this kale and you have to eat raw vegetables and do all this stuff. And you told me, actually, vata, when you do too much raw vegetables and cold things, you're gonna throw your temperature, your internal temperature up. And I was like, what? Like, because it did blow my mind. You wouldn't think that, like, raw, that too many salads would be bad for someone. But for me and my body type, it was becoming bad for me. Sure.
That is, I mean, and I remember when we had our conversation, you know, with pretty much anyone that I work with who has high vata, they are eating a lot of raw vegetables or smoothies or things that are cold. And interestingly, in Ayurveda, like attracts like. So when we, I always tell people there's a difference between like a strong craving, like addictive craving, versus an intuitive craving. So like, yeah. So like a strong addictive craving is when you have to go to the store or you have to go to Starbucks and get it right now. Like drop everything. I got to go to the fridge and get the chocolate. I got to drive to Starbucks. That's the kind of addictive craving versus, and what that is if you have high vata and you're like, I got to go make a smoothie or I want some ice cream or I really want a cold salad or something crunchy because vata's really like crunchy things too. They're like crunchy, like crackers and things like that. That is your high vata saying, I want to stay in this state. I want to stay high vata. So I'm going to get this kind of strong addictive craving, where like the intuitive craving is more like, you know what? I don't know. Some squash soup sounds really good right now. I think I'm going to go to the kitchen. I'll see if I have squash. If not, maybe I can make a different kind of soup. It's like, it's just that more subtle feeling that feels good, but it doesn't feel like something, it doesn't take over your mind like an addiction would.
Yeah. And yeah. That's really has been the value for me with Ayurveda. I don't think I completely understood what intuitive eating really was until I found Ayurveda, because I kind of learned too that I don't think I've ever asked until like a year ago, I don't ever think I asked my body, hey, what do you need today? And I think that is what intuitive eating is. I think it's me asking my body, what do you feel like eating today? Like, what would make you feel good? And it's been kind of amazing how my body has answered. And my body has a knack for really answering, like, with an answer that will make me feel better, more energized, less dizzy all the time, like all this stuff. So would that be your definition of intuitive eating as well? Like just simply asking the body?
Yeah, I think that's a huge component of it as well. And intuitive eating is really, really hard for people, especially those who are coming off of a diet, who are coming out of disordered eating, because they've been trained to ignore every signal from their body, because it's like you're fighting against, you know, your body's telling you like this low fat diet is not good. So you're craving nuts and seeds and peanut butter. But in your mind, you know, then your mind is like, but you need to stay within 10% macros of fat or whatever it is, right? So you're coming off of something like that and trying to retrain and trust yourself to say, if I feel like I need some more fat today, that probably just means that my organs in my body, in my brain, are asking for some more fat to function properly. So I need to honor that, right? And I think like if we could rephrase how we, also with intuitive eating, if you rephrase the way you look at macros, like carbs, protein, and fat, if you rephrase that as like carbs help my brain function clearly and give me energy, as opposed to carbs are gonna make me fat. Protein is necessary, but I don't need to overeat protein to build my muscles. Like there's this huge misconception that we have to eat like tons of protein because the fitness industry has pushed protein powders and that so much. But if we are listening to our body intuitively, we're naturally gonna get enough protein. Like you've never heard anyone say like, we have a protein deficiency problem in our society, right?
Right.
We can, and then again with fat, I mean, fat has been demonized on and off again for so many years in many different diets. And like these are all like, there's a reason why all these things exist in nature. It's because they're all essential. They're all essential for us, our bodies to be balanced and function. And so part of it definitely is asking yourself, body, what would you like to eat for breakfast today? What is going to be most nourishing to you? And after a while, your body is going to trust, you guys are going to trust each other again. And you will know that if you want to open up an avocado, which is really, really high in fat, and eat the avocado for breakfast, you know that that's your body asking for fat and omega-3 fatty acids and all the other crazy micronutrients in avocados. and not your body trying to trick you into making you fat, right? Our bodies aren't trying to like trick us into making us unhealthy, right? Like our body, you know, we naturally want to evolve and to survive. Like that's the natural human thing. So if we can rebuild that relationship, we can trust it. Yes, whatever we're wanting, as long as it's that not that addictive craving, our body knows how to survive because we are intelligent beings that it knows what it needs.
Right. And it's amazing like how just like, I don't know how I want to say this, but something you said about protein really resonated with me, because this is something that I think a lot of plant-based eaters kind of already know. Like, you know, maybe we don't need 50 grams of protein a day, right? Everybody's saying or whatnot. And that's the first thing we get asked when we say, oh, I eat mainly plant-based. Well, how are you getting your protein?
Right. But
I think people don't realize, like, there's certain, like, commercialized stuff in our society and in our relationship to food. Like, the meat industry is so for profit that how do you know that the meat industry didn't just plant that seed into your head that you need X amount of protein so you'll buy more meat? You know, like, and once you start kind of listening, and that's just one example, that's just one conspiracy theory, but once you really start asking your body, like, hey, dude, like, what can I feed you? You're so surprised by the answer, because it's just not the answer we've been given.
Right. And I think another example of that is the whole calcium thing of, like, you must drink 3 glasses of milk today to get as much calcium. And it's like, well, calcium exists in many different foods. Lots of plant foods have calcium. Nuts and seeds have a ton of calcium. And so I think that there's definitely a lot of brainwashing that has happened for these like hugely profit-based companies and organizations that like the meat industry and the dairy industry that are kind of, you know, ruining our planet. And it's not to say, as someone who is plant-based, it's not to say that I have judgment towards people who do choose to eat or feel that they need to eat dairy products or meat, but it is about maybe bringing awareness around the fact that how meat and dairy is currently being harvested, I guess you could say, is not working for our planet. And then there's also, I wanted to bring up the spiritual side of food.
Yeah.
Because when we think about how animals used to be killed for food, to nourish a tribe, right? The animal was raised under very, very nurturing conditions. They would take care of it. They would make sure that it had enough food and water and that it had enough space to roam. And when it was time to kill the animal, they blessed it, right? They would bless the animal and honor the animal, and they would not just throw away all the byproducts. They used the whole animal, which is such a spiritual, I mean, I'm getting goosebumps from it because that was how humans thanked the spirit of that animal, right? And so if we think about the meat industry and the dairy industry, are these animals, are their spirits being honored? Like, are their bodies being honored in any way? And then the problem with that in Ayurveda, there's the belief of you're going to take in the energy of the food you're eating.
The prana.
Yes, the prana, the life force energy. So, and for some people, this might be a little bit kind of out there to believe, and it's okay if you feel like this is a little out there. But let's say, for example, you're eating meat from an animal that was tortured or that was raised in its own feces or in really unsavory conditions. The energy of that animal throughout its life is stored in its body, and then you eat that animal and you're taking in the energy, the fear from that animal when it was killed, the anger that the animal had from never being able to see daylight, whatever it is. And so what we can do is we can look at taking in foods with that energy are going to lead to symptoms. Right? They're going to lead to depression, anger, frustration, because you're literally embodying the energy of that animal. So that's definitely something to think about, that, you know, the tribes and the small farmers that honor their animals, that take care of their animals, that honor them before they are killed and prepared to be eaten, that is completely different. It's just this mainstream industry that we've created is not only killing our environment, but it's also really unhealthy for humans as well.
Yeah, and I love that we're talking about this now. You know, we're recording during like month three of COVID, and this idea of like the problems with the meat industry are coming up a lot. So it's good to sort of bring awareness to if you've never thought about it before. And I don't think spirituality or Ayurveda or just food medicine in general is fundamentally against eating animals. I think what it is, how it's problematic, is the way we are doing it. That's the problem.
Exactly. And I mean, if you look at like a standard Ayurvedic diet, meat is not off the table. It's right. Just meat has very low prana, life force energy, because it's dead, right? It's not like a beautiful squash that you've grown in your garden that's been absorbing the energy of the sun all summer, right? It's coming from an animal that's dead. So it's not off limits, but it's about understanding that when you do take that in, you are taking in low prana food or energy, and it's not something you want to bring in all the time, right? Because then you're gonna start to see those things. But I think you had a post recently about the pig farm that had to kill thousands of pigs because there was nowhere for them to go to be processed, which processing means being killed and then their meat being processed or whatever. But I heard an interview with the farmer, with the wife of the farmer, and she was crying, and she was saying, no human should have to do this, which is so interesting because we are so disassociated, right? When she actually had to stand in front of these pigs that she had been taking care of and kill them herself, she felt their pain, and she felt the emotions behind that. And that I think if it was done differently, right, in a spiritual way, in a way that honored them, which you couldn't do for thousands of pigs, that would be different. But it's really interesting to look at, you know, when we go to the grocery store and we're buying all of our food, that kind of we're like, oh, I got this, I got this, I got this, and that, blah, blah, blah. Like, we just kind of throw everything in our cart. And what Ayurveda teaches us is we need to connect to that food. Take time to look at the produce, which produce looks like it has the best flavor and the most prana, that life force energy. And what other foods are you putting in your cart that intuitively feel balancing for your body, but that also are going to bring in as much energy as possible. And it's not to say that we need to not eat processed foods, or we need to not let ourselves have treats, because that's you know, also part of the human experience with food. Right. But I think it is about being more mindful when we're in the grocery store and looking at our food, and even like talking to the food. I think there was something going around where people were like cutting an apple in half, and they were speaking really kind to one half of the apple, and then really mean, dark words to the other apple. And like every single post that I saw, the apple that was spoken kind to, the half, rotted slower and didn't have as much mold and like darkness on it, which is so interesting that like when we connect with our food, that energy gets into the food and then comes back into us, which is kind of interesting.
Totally. And it's kind of reminding me the way you were describing like going to the store, although we're still in a store, we can kind of like pretend like we're the ancient people, you know, looking at, you know, our crops and seeing what we want to bring home to our family. I know that sounds woo-woo, but I also had someone, you know, when I first started working in a metaphysical shop, they sold crystals, right? So a lot of people that I would help, like just buying stuff and things like that, they would be like, what crystal should I get? And I would say, here's how you pick out a crystal. Don't read up, don't have a list, just look and use your eyes and see what your eye is drawn to. And once you pick it up, you'll be surprised, because I can almost guarantee that the meaning of that crystal will resonate with your soul in some way, but it's only because you intuitively chose it. And I've started to look at food like that a little bit more. And this even happened a couple weeks ago, or even a week ago. I was in the store, and I just, for some reason, for like the first time, I noticed in the produce section dandelion greens. And I was like, I don't usually buy dandelion greens, like, but this thought of like dandelion was really coming to me. And about 2 days later, I have some gastritis. So some inflammation started coming up. I felt like I had some pain around my liver. And the first herb that I looked up when it came to the liver was dandelion. And I was, oh my God, like once you start intuitively eating, it's amazing what you pick up on. Like, I couldn't believe that I just like randomly was like, what is dandelion? And then long story short. So I just shared that because it's not as hard as people think it is.
No, it really isn't. But it's hard in the sense of like, you have to fight against that conditioning of like, I write down all my recipes for the week, and I always have Taco Tuesday night, and I always have lasagna night, and I always have, you know, I think you can kind of get into that routine of like, every time I go to the grocery store, I buy this. And for me, what it's become is I always have my staples of like my legumes and my basmati rice and quinoa and grains. And then, but as far as like produce goes, I like to go to the store and just kind of look at everything and be like, what looks and sounds good this week? And if the spinach looks wilted and low prana, I'm going to skip that. Maybe my greens for that week will be curly kale or broccoli or whatever it might be. And I think that allowing yourself to kind of just flow, like you said, like pretending that you're a farmer looking at your crop, or that you're a hunter-gatherer and you're just kind of like, you know, hunter-gatherers wouldn't pick like the leaves that looked kind of floppy and wilted. They would go for the ones that were like, you know, rigid and super green and whatever it might be. And I also think for those who can grow some of your food in the summertime, their gardening is such a powerful way to connect to food, right? And to connect to the energy of your food and to kind of build that relationship. So even if you can just have like one pot with like some greens, or you're going to grow some squash. I keep saying squash. I need some squash.
Your intuition is like, time for some squash.
But yeah, if you can, you know, even if you can just have like one pot where you're growing some herbs or something, because in Ayurveda, herbs and spices are so valuable for your Agni, for your digestive fire. So for summertime, when it's hot, so cooling herbs like cilantro and mint are so good. So if you can grow your own cilantro and mint and go out there and watch it grow and water it and connect with it and talk to it and smell it, you know, like that just builds that relationship. So then when you're actually ready to use it, you are already connected to the energy and the healing power of that plant or herb. So I would definitely recommend for those who can, even if it's just a small little pot, definitely connect with your food through gardening if you can.
Right. You know, that's such a good idea. And I like how we're talking about this, because at least in Murica, we're coming up in the summer, and we still, I think, need to, you know, social distance and everything. So maybe some people are feeling the call. I can't really leave my house, or I'm leaving my house minimally. Might as well plant a garden if you have room, or do something, even if you have a little windowsill. Maybe you could grow some, an herb or whatever it may be. You know, it could be a really good use of the time. You know, something I wanted to ask you was, you know, we talked a little bit about, you know, disordered eating and just people, I think in general have, you know, our thoughts, I think, are just naturally disordered around eating just because of the society we grow up in. And I think a lot of us, especially those of us who are empaths or highly sensitive people, we tend to really easily dissociate from our bodies and everything like that. So I want to know from your perspective, like in Ayurvedic medicine school, was there anything there where you were like, oh, fuck no, like that doesn't resonate, or like I'm not bringing that into my practice, like that's not gonna work for me, like
oh my gosh. Well, part of the reason why I resisted starting the program for so long was because I felt it was going to be triggering for me, because I knew going into it that I knew what my doshas were, and part of the program was keeping a food log and practicing making sure that you were balancing your dosha through your food and diet. And I avoided it I put it off for probably 2 or 3 months because I was just like, I feel like this is going to be triggering for me. And I finally got to a place where I knew I could handle it and manage it. And so the program that I went through is definitely like a very rigid and strict type program where they really highly recommend that like you stick to the foods that balance you. You stick to only eating foods that are in season. And my problem with that is that anytime you put those lines around or that box around something, then you take a little bit of that intuition out. And their kind of philosophy is, well, if you're serving your body with the foods and practices that it needs to be balanced, then you're not going to crave anything outside of that. But I personally find that because we do, even though we have the elements that make up the most of our body, we still do all are made up. We are all made up of the five elements, you know, even if we have ones that are our dosha that are more predominant. So for example, in the wintertime, even though I do carry pitta in the wintertime when it's cooler, even though for my pitta, I shouldn't be eating, you know, maybe a little bit of spice in the wintertime, maybe that's intuitively something I want because I need a little bit more heat for my vata. And so that's something that I've kind of found was restrictive and triggering. And then also things like, you know, they tell you should chew your food a certain number of times before you swallow, or that you should only eat in increments of 3 to 4 hours. And all of that, every time I saw that, I was kind of like, that's BS. Because yes, you do need to let your body, and the philosophy behind it makes sense though, because you do want to chew your food thoroughly, because then you're doing your stomach and your intestines a favor by pre-digesting your food. So you don't want to be like swallowing your lettuce without chewing, or your rice or whatever. Like, you want to give yourself time to chew, right? But you don't need to sit there and count, because when we bring in counting calories, counting how many times you chew, counting your macros, that's disordered eating. That's very triggering for people. And then in addition to that, when it comes to the time spacing, if you have that intuitive connection with your body, if you feel hungry 2 hours after you have breakfast, that's your body communicating to you that it's hungry and it needs food. So the problem with telling someone you need to wait 3 to 4 hours is that that's training them to ignore that signal from their body of you've already digested your breakfast, so you need to eat. And my example of that is one of the counselors in the program told me that I should have maybe just try having some soaked fruit in the morning for breakfast and then waiting 4 to 5 hours to have lunch. And so I did it for about 3 days and then I said F this, because what was happening? I had the dried soaked fruit. And then 2 hours later, my vata was triggered and I was so dizzy I could barely concentrate in front of my students, because for those who don't know, I also am a high school Spanish teacher. So I could barely focus. I had, and then I'm looking at the clock and I'm like, well, she told me I can't eat for 2 more hours. And so after 3 days of that, I was like, this isn't working, and switched back to breakfast that actually could sustain me, you know, long enough until my lunch break. So I think, so when I work with my clients, I do say, you know, generally 3 to 4 hours is how much time it takes to digest a meal. But if intuitively you feel hungry before, please, please eat, you know, please listen to your body. And so I think the philosophy of Ayurveda in terms of giving your body time to digest makes sense. But giving a blanket statement of wait 3 to 4 hours to every human on the planet doesn't make sense, because everybody's metabolism is different. Everybody's body is going to digest and process at different rates. That's just the way it goes.
Right. Yeah. And I think like very traditional Ayurveda, it does definitely strike me as something that seems kind of strict.
Yeah.
But, you know, since talking to you and learning more about it, I've learned to sort of just integrate little pieces of Ayurveda in my everyday diet that have made a difference. Like, am I like an Ayurvedic queen, and do I live my life every step of the way as a Vata balanced? No. But now I kind of stop and think, like, okay, if I am going to eat something more cooling, what can I also pair with it that's warming, that can balance it? Or, you know, being also a little bit more just having more variety in what I'm eating has been really big when it comes to having Ayurveda in my life, because I got so used to having the same thing every day. And I think my habits of like the same 3 meals were, in a way, after a while, inflaming me, literally causing inflammation. And I'm like, okay, what would Ayurveda do? Well, what would this food do? Or like, could this food help? Like, it really is that food as medicine.
Oh, for sure. And I personally have found that, you know, I definitely used to have that, like I've moved through so many ridiculous things with my relationship with food through my experiences with disordered eating. I mean, and it's interesting because from an outsider's perspective, no one would have ever known, because I wasn't living in a body that looked like I had an eating disorder. I was living in a body that looked healthy, and I was eating foods that were healthy, right? Really high raw, high vegetable, high fruit, plant-based diet, but it was making me sick. It was literally making me sick. And not just the food that didn't align with my dosha, but the mental game associated with that, of like, you need to have a raw breakfast, you need to have a raw lunch, and then when it's dinner time, you can have something cooked. Because in the vegan community, there's this horrific diet that I fell prey to. The raw till 4 diet, which is like this philosophy that you should only eat raw foods until 4 o'clock, and then you can have a cooked meal, which when I look back on it, I think that is completely ridiculous. Like, that makes zero sense. But the people who promote this diet are these like super fit, vibrant women who have these really hip, cool YouTube channels. And so they prey on people who may be prone to disordered eating, or even to any woman who looks at that, or anyone who identifies as a woman, to look at those videos and be like, well, I kind of want to look like that. I want to have that much energy. I want to be, you know, vibrant. So I'm going to try it. But I found, like you said, that when you eat the same 3 meals every day, you're not eating the rainbow, so to speak, right? Like, you're missing out on micronutrients, which are so important. And there's also in Ayurveda the philosophy of extractive and augmenting foods. So extractive foods are like leafy greens, nuts and seeds, legumes, and they are just as important as augmenting foods like fruits, sweet potatoes, squash, rice. However, we need to have a balance of those things, because the extractive foods are what detoxes and pulls the ama, the toxins, out of our body, whereas the augmenting foods are really balancing and nourishing. So if we're eating like what I was doing, eating huge amounts of extractive food and not giving my body enough augmenting food, not to mention that raw foods are really tough on Vata dosha, which is my primary dosha, you're just going to throw yourself like way out of balance, which is so funny because when you look at that diet, you're like, oh yeah, it makes sense. Raw foods have the most prana because they're alive, right?
Right. Yeah. How, I was going to ask, you know, there might be some people listening that maybe do have a history with eating disorders or disordered thoughts about eating or whatever it may be. And maybe some of this is really resonating for them. But like you said, like when you have a history of disordered thoughts around eating, any program, quote unquote, even if it's an ancient philosophy like Ayurveda, anything starts to be like, oh, that's scary. Like, I can't go back there. Or like, I don't want to trigger myself. So I don't know. Like, I'm wondering, is there anything, because Ayurveda is a way of life. Is there something that doesn't involve food that we can all kind of maybe integrate into our life that's Ayurveda, if maybe we're not ready, or maybe this is something that we feel like we're going to put on the back burner, do some more research, because obviously everybody should do their own research when it comes to the things they're putting in their bodies. But give us some more like non-food Ayurvedic things.
Yeah, we have been talking about food for most of the podcast.
I like it.
Yeah, so for people who, and just for those listeners who know who have had a history of eating disorder or disordered thoughts around food, it is something that I still have to work through every day. That I have to, when I, you know, because my brain is so trained to fall into that pattern, I recognize when it's coming up, and I now know what conversation I have to have with myself to soothe and kind of, you know, let that part of my brain know that I acknowledge it, but that we're not operating in that way anymore. But for those who feel that, yes, maybe getting into the food component of Ayurveda might be a little bit triggering, connection to nature is such a deep, deep component of Ayurveda. Making sure that you have time outside, even if the conditions aren't great, to connect and to feel earth, you know, taking your shoes off and connecting with the ground and the earth. Making sure that your living space is sattvic, right? So sattvic is the peace and harmony, as opposed to tamasic, which is like the stagnant kind of death energy, right? So ways that you can do that is bringing in things like plants into your living space, crystals, things with high prana, with that high life force energy. So there's been this movement of plants, you know, people love having them because they're aesthetically pleasing, where people used to just have fake plants in their house, right? But now it's kind of cool to be like plant mom, right? And it is cool because it means when you have plants in your house that you're fostering this living environment that has high prana. And so they're definitely like the feng shui of Ayurveda. Feng shui and the Ayurvedic sattvic kind of setup of a household space is very similar, of having clear spaces, including things like chimes and bells into your living space, just to kind of clearing spaces, trying not to have a lot of clutter as well. That's something that, I don't know if Mal, if you relate to this, but I know that like when I sit down to meditate or to do yoga or to even do work, if my space is like cluttered or there's lots of things around me, I feel like energetically I can't kind of focus. I can't focus in or be grounded. I don't know if you feel the same.
100%. And I actually feel that it is disrespectful to invite spirit into a cluttered space.
Yeah.
So especially before I start a reading, before I'm on Zoom with a client, I do like a quick like scan of my environment. And I'm like, okay, what clutter can I put away? Is there anything I can clear? Can I, you know, because I want spirit to be invited into the cleanest space possible. And also some people that I've read for before, they want to start living a more intuitive life. Yeah. But then I ask them, oftentimes there's like this message about like, wait a second, like, your house is really cluttered, or there's this one room that like has a bunch of junk in it. And they're like, yeah, like, how did you know that? And I'm like, well, spirit saying like they can't come through with all of the clutter.
No, I literally, when I work with clients as well, whether it's for a tarot reading or for Ayurvedic counseling, my table, like, I can't have any other technology on the table. Like, my phone can't be on the table. Like, electrical cords and things like that, and I have to put away anything that's not spirit related, you know, has to go away. And I do think that since we are spirits as well, that we have to honor our living space as much as possible. And the mental clarity that we get from cleaning our house and cleaning our space, everybody knows that feeling of like cleaning up and how you feel afterwards, right? And that goes in with other Ayurvedic practices, cleansing the body, right?
Yes. I think we need to get into my favorite Ayurvedic practice.
Mel and I love the word Abhyanga. So Abhyanga is the practice of body oil massage, right? And so for someone who's Vata, who's air in space, who's naturally cold a lot because they naturally, in space is freezing, right? Oiling your body and massaging your body brings heat back into the body and also helps remove toxins. So this is a practice that everyone can do. And you probably, most people already have the practice of putting on lotion or something after a shower. But what you can do is reverse that to before, a couple times a week before you get in the shower. If you're someone who naturally carries more heat, like a Pitta dosha, coconut oil is probably your preferred oil because it's cooling. Vatas are going to want almond oil, maybe sesame oil if you don't mind the smell, because that has, those oils carry heat. And then Kapha actually does best with a dry brush or like dry massage. So if you are more earth or water energy, you don't carry a lot of heat, you don't feel cold, you're kind of right there in the middle, you can get away with just like a dry brush massage. But the process is sort of prepping your body, removing toxins, and then getting in and cleansing your whole body is sort of this beautiful process of either bringing coolness or heat into your body, or movement and energy, which Kapha needs that earth energy, and prepping yourself for the cleansing of a bath or a shower. So you guys can Google it, Abhyanga, but basically what you do is you have your oil of choice. You can add an essential oil. You can start from your face down if you want, but you just massage the oil in long strokes with deeper pressure if you're Vata, all the way down your body until you get to your feet. And especially for someone like Mao, who's a Pisces, double Pisces, for myself as a Pisces moon, and for my oldest child, Jamin, who has the same birthday as Mao, and they're both double Pisces, and he's a Scorpio rising too, which is like, you know, so he's full emotion, full water, full intuition.
Right.
The focusing on the feet is really, really huge. And we also have marmas, energetic points throughout our entire body, but we have the most concentration of them in our hands and our feet. So paying extra attention to your hands and your feet. We all know how amazing it feels when someone like massages our feet or our hands, because we're hitting on those marma points that are energetic. And as Mal, as a Reiki master, you understand the power of these, you know, energetic points on our body. So taking that time to really focus in, and I always like to tell my clients, as you are practicing Abhyanga, to take the time to connect with your body, to not be watching something or be listening to music, but really just be connecting to your body and asking it, like, how is this feeling? Does this feel good? Because it's that sacred relationship that you want to rebuild with your physical body, through touch, because, for a lot of people who have a history of abuse or who have disassociation with their body, Abhyanga is a great way to rebuild that trust with your physical body, as you kind of move through each point.
Totally. And Abhyanga has been, for me, just like an amazingly simple but truly effective way of just regulating my nervous system. At the end of the day, because, you know, in Reiki or any kind of energy healing, we learn about the aura, which is sort of like the invisible, energetic sort of coat you are wearing. And the aura has a lot to do with our nervous system. And what I kind of imagine Abhyanga doing is sort of clearing that aura so then you can reconnect back to your body. And I know that you have so many IGTVs about like all these different things. So we'll obviously put all of your stuff down below. But since we're kind of like nearing the end, I want you to talk a little bit about what you offer, A, but B, I mean, for anybody who's like, oh, I want to know my dosha, like, am I a pitta, am I a kapha, or am I a vata? Is there an online quiz that's actually good, or is it kind of like online astrology quizzes where like you can kind of get a little bit, but it's really the consultation that really helps you? Or
yeah, I think like, I do have a dosha questionnaire download on my website, intuitivehealing.online, that I created myself, that I feel is pretty darn accurate. The online ones that you find are, yeah, they're like the online astrology where they're going to give you probably a pretty close hit, but they're not going to give you that deeper understanding that a consultation and one-to-one with me would give. They also don't take into account, you know, we have to look at your prakriti, your base nature. So your prakriti is who you were or who you are when you were born. So what elements did you embody that were predominant when you were born, and how moving through time with environmental stressors and conditioning and all of that, have you moved away from it? So a lot of times when people take a questionnaire, they base it off of what I'm feeling currently, which is actually their vikriti, so which is their out of balance state. So it can be a little bit tricky to figure out that prakriti, like who are you really when you're in balance? So that's why the online ones can be a little tough, because people will usually do that thinking, how do I feel right now? And a lot of times, I mean, 99% of us are living out of balance in at some level, right? I would say, definitely try it out, because at least it will give you an understanding of where you are now, right? But if you want to know, like, okay, what is my actual base nature? A consultation would be great. You can even check out that questionnaire that I have on the website. But in addition to offerings, so we know that I also read tarot. I do, you know, one-to-one tarot readings that are completely separate from Ayurveda, but I also do bring tarot into my Ayurvedic consultations, because Spirit will communicate with me directly during consultations, but I like to have the tarot cards to just kind of almost like a tool to show my clients of like the confirmation of like, here's, you know, this is what Spirit is telling me, and here's the confirmation on the card. And I think when we look at, you know, because the tarot cards are also elemental, right? They're also connected to the elements. I will see often that the cards that I'm pulling in consultations or when I type up a wellness plan are connected to the elements of that person's prakriti, their base nature, and their dosha. And so Spirit and I kind of communicate through tarot with my clients to answer questions like, what's out of balance? What's causing you to be out of balance? Because as we know, Spirit speaks, they're unbiased, right? So they're going to give us the truth. What can we do to kind of bring you back into balance, and what tools do we have? And so I really love the tarot for that, because when I look at a tarot card, I see tools on every single card, right? There's tools and medicine on every card that we look at. And I have such a deep connection with Spirit through tarot. So I really like using that to supplement the consultations and then also the wellness plans that I create for my clients.
Awesome. Well, I am so happy we finally got to talk on the show, and I'm sure at some point we'll do another, there's many collaborations for us in store.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
You know, I think maybe give us like 10 years, you guys, me and Heather, I'll do like some retreat in like Bali or something. No, I'm kidding. Like, but we'll
no, that would be amazing. Something.
Yeah.
Asia, Southeast Asia for sure. And yeah. I mean, I've been to Thailand, and definitely had some major like spiritual stuff go down there. So I know if we did a retreat in Southeast Asia, it'd be or in Mexico, that would also be.
I'm down for both of those. So if any podcast listeners are in alignment with a potential retreat in a give us a couple years to manifest, but be in alignment with us, because I think that would be awesome. And I'll leave everything of yours down below. And maybe I should say, since it is almost June 2020 at the time we are recording, we're going to be popping on IG Live. I think we decided Tuesday nights in June for as many as we can. We're going to be talking about tarot, having some tarot talks on IG Live in June. So keep an eye out on both my Instagram and Heather's Instagram for more info.
Yeah, I'm super excited. I'm super excited for that. We had our Intuitive Fridays, and now we're transitioning to Tarot Tuesdays. And we're going to be getting into the breakdown of a bunch of different cards and everything. So it should be good. It should be a good one.
Awesome. Okay. Well, thank you so much, Heather. And thank you all for listening. And we'll talk to you guys next time.
Thank you so much for having me, Mel.
Okay. Bye, Heather. Thank you.